What is up, guys? Welcome back to The Meaning of Podcasts, the podcast where we talk about your favorite filmmakers and the deeper meaning within their films. I am here, obviously, with the usual crew, Mr. RB3 and Sabrina, but joining us also this week, we have Mr. Alex Marzonia. What's up, bro?
Hey, guys. It's me. It's Alex. It's nice to join you guys again. I was on around this time last year to play live. I think that was the last time I was on with you guys.
That's right. First Cut Live. Yeah. We did the meaning live. Of... No, actually, it wasn't meaning of episode. It was the meaning of live entertainment. And you were giving us that live entertainment breakdown. Mm. So, that, you know, you are a recurring guest on the meaning of. You're probably one of the top three most episodes. Yeah.
Yeah, let's get one of the fans to count every single guest. And then I'll hopefully be on the top tier there.
For sure, yeah, for definitely. Sure, man. Definitely appreciate you coming by. We know you're a big film fan, and we know you're a great person to have on for this topic. I've been wanting to do this for quite a minute. RB3 and Sabrina know this. I've been talking about this since, like, February. But I really do feel like this is kind of a great moment to talk about where Asian American filmmakers are now and kind of where they're going, especially with the rise of a lot of popular movies over the past 5 years, specifically The Farewell, Crazy Rich Asians, Minari, all these movies that have kind of popped off, even international films like Parasite, which won Best Picture. I thought that was a big moment as well. And I've been wanting to talk about kind of where we were a good 20, 30 years ago and where we're going now. And I'm curious to see if that is actually changing, or it's our perception that's changing around Asian American filmmakers. But I want to start with you, Alex, as far as how do you feel about where Asian American filmmakers are now in the Hollywood industry? And are they, you know, growing or rising in popularity, do you feel?
Yeah, definitely. They're definitely growing and rising just because we have more opportunity now. Hollywood is definitely diversifying and making a point to diversify. And us Asians are getting more opportunities, which is very nice. I'm not sure if there's necessarily any Filipino filmmakers, Asian American filmmakers out there right now. But just the fact that we are getting representation behind the camera, in front of the camera, we're so much better than how we were before, like 20, 30 years ago. So
it's interesting. I feel like there is Filipino actors, right? I feel like there's a few Filipino actors.
Yeah. That kind of actors. I think, what's his face from The Good Place.
Okay.
I know that. We have Dante Bosco as well, who actually just directed his first film, which I saw at South by Southwest this year. And we're growing there.
Yeah, how do you feel about how these past few years have been for Asian American filmmakers, Sabrina?
It's not even just getting it behind the camera, it's the representation behind the scenes, in front of the camera, people in the writer's room for, let's say, television or film in general. It's where we go from our representation being caricatures of different stereotypes and, like, racial stereotypes that we have, versus now where we get really authentic stories from these Asian American filmmakers or other filmmakers that are just diving into different stories. Look at something like The Half of It that has so many different aspects of representation. Obviously, we have a lesbian romance. We have what it's like to be an immigrant living in America, and that kind of culture that you grow up with that you might not necessarily see if you don't know somebody who is from another country or anything like that. So it's always just important to have these stories told. And over the last few years, we've seen a rise in that. And it's always amazing.
RB3, do you feel like this is more like people are starting to notice the filmmakers that were already there? Or do you feel like there is more Asian American filmmakers making major motion pictures?
Well, I do think there's a new wave of diversity and a new wave of championing diversity in Hollywood as of lately that has amplified those voices a lot more. But I think when we look under the surface, especially over the last 20 years, you know, Asian American filmmakers have been consistently on the rise. Even we see back in 2000 with Ang Lee's Oscar nomination for Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. If I'm not mistaken, that was the first time a foreign language film had been nominated for Best Director back in 2000s. Next thing, you know, we have Ang Lee himself would also later become the first Asian American filmmaker to win Best Director for Life of Pi in 2012. And, you know, after... And no, I'm sorry. Was that no? I'm sorry. Not for Life of Pi. He actually won for Brokeback Mountain. Yeah, he won for Brokeback Mountain. He also won for Life of Pi too. So Ang Lee has been like one of, I guess, the quote unquote like, you know, main. You know, in terms of like award contention, he's always had a lot more of like the award contention stuff on his, you know, on his resume. But now the love is getting spread and divvied up a lot more evenly across a lot of different fields. You know, it's not just about the and you know, we could talk about when we're going to talk about Nomadland and like all the other Asian American films that kind of resemble like the Americana experience, and that's kind of what Ang Lee kind of popped off for with Brokeback Mountain. That's what he first won for, emulating that Americana aesthetic, you know, from an Asian voice, from a you know, like an outsider voice per se. I think that's something that is we're beginning to see resonate more and more, because we're starting to see those voices become more prevalent and more understood across all walks of life. You know, I think if we would have looked, I was just reading an article literally earlier about 5 years ago, when Chris Rock was hosting the Oscars, they made a whole joke about like the accountants, like being like little Asian kids, like, you know, and they brought out little Asian kids on the stage. This was literally in like 2016. And now 5 years later, we're at a point where it's so reversed. Now we're celebrating and championing a movie about Korean American immigrants. So, you know, even though like the change, we've been seeing the change slowly over time, is really cranked up as of late. I think largely because of the Oscars So White movement before that. And I think that movement has amplified a lot more diversity in Hollywood. But I also think people are just getting to value these voices more and starting to see how much money mm-hmm. is starting to be made behind Asian American filmmakers, particularly people like John M. Chu. Like you said, like we're going to talk about soon, Dustin from, you know, from Shang-Chi. Bong Joon-ho obviously is remarkably successful, one of the highest grossing foreign films. So there's a lot of success coming from the Asian American filmmaking market. And I feel like that's what's amplifying that impact a lot more now.
Yeah, I'm curious to see, Alex, how you feel about the impact of certain roles kind of being written there for Asian actors, right? I'm transferring a little bit specifically towards Asian American actors who now have a little bit more of an opportunity because more directors and filmmakers and maybe TV shows are looking for more Asian representation and more Asian actors. I kind of look back at the irony of someone like a Steven Yeun, right? An actor who's been in the industry for quite a minute, but he kind of popped off in The Walking Dead. And as someone who actively followed The Walking Dead since literally day one, when it premiered, there was nothing... Also. It was so organic, right? It was literally like, here's Rick. Yeah, it was literally like it made sense that there was just this really smart Asian kid who happened to be in this group, because that's what felt natural and organic. And then you found out that that's actually how he was written in the comic. So when the casting director had to make their decision, they were like, well, we need an Asian guy because he's literally an Asian in the comic. So how do you feel about those roles being specifically written for like, hey, let's get this, you know, Asian kid, because this is a diverse neighborhood where this story takes place?
I mean, yeah, it's definitely great. Like I have a lot of friends, like one of my, the star of the Kung Fu series, Olivia Liang, like I sat right next to her in Calculus One class in high school. It was like, it's pretty cool to see her like leading a CW show now. And like, I think it was they were considering rebooting that, and they were like, okay, we had, because it was like a 60s 70s TV show before, starring David Carradine in Yellowface, and so they were like, okay, now that we're rebooting it, we gotta have an Asian person in it in the lead. And so thankfully they casted it right. crazy that they casted one of my high school friends. But like, it's just super cool that like Hollywood is diversifying and just, getting people into roles. And we had Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I think I didn't watch it, but that took place like a few cities near me too. And was centered around Filipino Americans. And let's see, Good Place also, the guy who plays Jason, he didn't have to be Asian as well. So, and turns out he was Filipino, so.
Well, I also think about like the idea of like roles that fit the part. I mean, obviously, my favorite show from last year is no surprise. It was Devs, but Devs was like, this is Silicon Valley, fam. Like, there's gonna be Asians here, and the fact that the two leading stars were Asian, I thought that was kind of a big deal as well. But it made sense. Like, this is literally taking place in San Francisco, and if you've been to San Francisco, there's a lot of Asians in San Francisco. So I feel like a lot of stories like that is kind of like naturally developing into like, hey, this is something that if we ignore it, it would be way worse. And those
Like
kind of
we get
roles.
more backlash if we don't cast it.
Well, because
Yeah, but.
whenever we watch something, we always want to see the screen kind of reflect what we see in real life. So when we're talking about stories, also even something like Mortal Kombat from 1995 versus the Mortal Kombat that just recently released, seeing like Raiden's character get like whitewashed, it's just stuff that doesn't feel correct as you're watching it. So then when we have a character that organically fits in a place that we know if we went to a certain city, we would see people like completely diverse. If you go to a place like Chicago, Los Angeles, New York, so many different pockets of this country, you see everyone. So it is weird to see certain movies when it takes place in something like Sacramento or whatever, and it's an entire class of just like all white kids. Like it just doesn't make sense because that's not the reality of what we see in life. But then when we do see other races on screen, it's always great to have people in the writer's room so that we get the authentic version of what these characters are. And that's something that someone mentioned Crazy Rich Asians earlier, and that's my favorite rom-com of all time now. I've watched it so many times since its release, and it's only been a few years, but it's stories that are just so beautiful in its representation because it's not patting itself on the back in any way. It's just an organic way of storytelling and showing a world that we don't necessarily get to see all the time. It's always like something that was also brought up very recently. Disney constantly patting itself on the back for like their first gay character in every movie. They keep saying it. I'm like, how many times are you gonna have a first gay character? And they always change like one word where it's like they're openly gay in this one. And so it's just instead of like patting yourself on the back or putting things to get praise, it's just telling the story like it is, showing the world like it is.
Yeah, and I think, especially like when we look at how recently, as of recently, how some of these problems are still like being in Hollywood, right? Like we talk about Disney, trying to pat themselves on the back at every point. We also forget that they've been behind some of the most like egregious portrayals of Asian stereotypes from the beginning, even from Aristocats, right? In their animated films, even in more recent times, and this is not Disney in particular, I mean more generally in Hollywood, how bad Asian representation has been. We even think about a couple years ago with Emma Stone being white, playing that whitewashed character in that Cameron Crowe movie. I forget the exact name of it.
Aloha.
Aloha. Exactly. So it's like, even now, even to this day, even as of like 2014, we're still having that debate and that conversation. And that stems all the way back from the 1960s with, old boy from Breakfast at Tiffany's, Mickey Rooney, to like the 1950s with the Good Earth, or I'm sorry, the 1930s with the Good Earth, like the MGM movie that won a bunch of awards. So there's like a ton of like negative representation. So it's the goal has now is to
Aloha.
offset that as much as possible with positivity, with optimistic roles that are inclusive and are reflective of a greater sense of sensibility and I guess I should say community and welcomeness towards the American experience. And I think that's why at least I applaud films like Minari, films like Crazy Rich Asians, like films that even like Ryan the Last Dragon are giving like a new voice and new cadence to that community that has been, frankly, in Hollywood, you know, just in the same way that blackface has been prevalent, the same way that terrible Latino representation, Latinx representation has been represented in Hollywood, the Asian American community has been trashed on. But now this is the new awakening and the new, like, kind of reviving of bringing a new light to those voices.
Yeah. Alex, did you see the Bruce Lee documentary, Be Water?
I have not.
I highly recommend it, but it's so interesting, RB3, because we did a video on that. We did a couple videos on that documentary. But he talked about how when he grew up watching films and how he wanted to be an actor and the kind of representation he saw from Asians during that time, which was, you know, a very significant and very different time, was Asian men being very much beneath white men, and Asian men being treated as lesser than, beneath them, as submissive, and how he kind of turned on that and said, I can kick your ass straight up. And he straight up became alpha male, alpha dog, like, you know, basketball player, super athlete, that kind of like mad dog mentality that he showed in all his movies to show a different side to Asians, which was kind of the martial arts side, and which kind of opened up a different avenue, obviously, to Jackie Chan, to Jet Li, to other Asian creators who want to show off their martial arts. This was something that wasn't as common back in the day, and it kind of stemmed from Bruce Lee's creation. And I kind of want to lead into a conversation that I was going to save for later on, but I'll bring it in now. How do you feel about the kind of stories that we're being told by Asians now, kind of being still, I mean, Bruce Lee was from the 70s, bro, but we're still kind of in that same path as far as like the big major motion pictures this year for Asians are Shang-Chi, Mortal Kombat, and Snake Eyes, which is coming out later, but they're all martial arts films. How do you feel about that? Do you feel like that's going to get a little stale and we're going to be like, all right, another martial arts, bro, we got to punch and kick, then we got to need an Asian guy? Or do you feel like, dude, finally, because we've been having so many martial arts white dudes for so long, freaking Captain America doing backflips and karate kicks, and you're like, F that guy, there should be an Asian guy doing this, not another white guy. Yeah, exactly. Like, we've had so many white dudes doing martial arts for so long that finally we have a renaissance of, like, martial arts Asian dudes.
At least it's mainstream now.
Yeah.
Like, we had Jackie Chan and Jet Li's Chinese movies that made it over, that were imported over here, and they did well, but now it's, you know, it's American productions that are taking over, and we're getting that kind of, and we're getting people behind the camera in the writers' rooms, and still Asian actors, thank goodness, that are
Look at Iron Fist.
Making Snake Eyes, that are making Shang-Chi.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, I mean, we still have movies like Minari that still highlight the small stories. So I sincerely hope that what's the director of Minari's name? Lee Isaac Chung. I really hope that he continues to create small stories like that, because that was my favorite movie of last year. It was so beautiful.
I think his next movie is Your Name, right?
Oh, yes.
His next movie.
He's adapting that.
Which, if anyone has seen that, I think I'm the only one who's seen that. Have you seen it? Okay.
Yeah.
Me and Alex, only one have seen that. I think that's his next movie, which is obviously a very famous anime movie that premiered a couple years ago in Japan. It's one of my favorites of the decade. I think that's his next movie, so that's kind of a major...
Lee Isaac Chung.
A big movie, right? Kind of?
Yeah.
Kind of big movie?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, we talked about before, Ace, how... Like, there's still a whole new market of, like, anime adaptations that could still be...
Oh, I'll get there. Grabs. And, if we want to talk about it now, we can. But there's definitely a discussion to be had about anime adaptations either happening now or in the future, and how we're going to talk about these anime adaptations and not cast actors that are Asian. Like, how can we not do that? I don't know. I don't know how that's going to happen, if that's going to happen.
I mean, we've seen the backlash from it already from Scarlett Johansson and Ghost in the Shell, but
and Death Note,
Death Note, and from Dragon Ball Evolution. Going back to the martial arts thing, martial arts cinema was really one of the first avenues for people of color in cinema to actually thrive in. You know, there's a lot of, I mean, a lot of people talk about how back in the 1950s and 60s, Sidney Poitier would literally be the only black person on set, like a lot of times, or in the studio a lot. Only person of color, only non-white person, like on the studio. Until, you know, we started seeing this rise of like martial arts films coming from the East, from Hong Kong, from China. And those films ended up being so successful because they played in small theaters, urban communities, specifically catered to black audiences. Like the same theaters that were playing the blaxploitation movies were playing the Chinese karate movies because, you know, they weren't being played anywhere else. Like the mainstream audience weren't trying to play them anywhere else. But they ended up being such big hits and being so influential to those communities, especially in black communities. Like, my grandma is the biggest like Bruce Lee fan in the entire world. Like any movie like Bruce Lee, like Enter the Dragon, anything. She knows it, like, and she's on it. And even to this day, she's still like a diehard martial arts film fan. And I think that has become so ingrained in our pop culture lexicon, the martial arts films, the Bruce Lees, eventually the Jet Lees and the Jackie Chans and the all these crazy, crazy stars that are coming
from. The new guys, right?
Yeah. I was gonna say from the Ray films.
Yeah, Joe Taslim.
Yeah, and it's really brilliant because it's such a unique form of cinema too. Like it's very, like I've always argued that animation is probably one of the most distinctive forms of cinema because like that you can't really replicate it in anywhere else. And I almost feel like martial arts cinema is almost the same. Like I don't think you can get like a picture or a painting or anything that encapsulates martial arts in the same way that cinema can, especially with the editing and all this stuff. So directors that use it cleverly, like Ang Lee and Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, often get celebrated for that too. So I think creative martial arts cinema is something that we in America has been valuing for a long time because it's been so deeply rooted in our culture for such a long time. I think that's why a movie like Shang-Chi is going to be like super, super lit because we've been essentially asking for this as a culture, as a society for a super long time.
And it's also one thing too, and I'll present this to you, Sabrina, because you like comic book movies, and one thing about comic books that kind of differs from live action cinema is the fact that comic books kind of took this, you know, power of martial arts films and decided to kind of flip it on its head and say, yeah, that we want that, but it's a white dude, where they're like, yo, imagine this guy who's an expert in 80 martial arts. His name is Batman. And all he has is his fist to fight, but he's a white dude. And it's like, imagine this dude who's like his iron fist and he's powerful, but he's a white dude. And it's like, it's always been in comics, at least, the crazy, super crazy martial arts dude is a white dude. Like even the most popular, I just said Captain America, but that's a perfect example of like, he's a badass, you know, hand-to-hand combat guy and he's Captain America. And it's like, are we kind of over
that? Earlier, 100%. I feel like everything that we said earlier about kind of like racial stereotypes and caricatures, it's like when we saw certain characters on screen, it's like, look at something like 16 Candles. People weren't ready to like, embrace seeing other people on screen in empowering roles. So I feel like at like the birth of comic books 100 years ago, basically at this point, I just think, yeah, society as a whole, again, we didn't see any representation in front of the camera, behind the scenes, the people making a lot of the comics. So we didn't see it reflected onto our pages, unfortunately. That's just the way that it was. So now, as we take these characters that have been beloved and written, Captain America was from like the 40s or something? Like it's been a long time. Now we could start to see different iterations. Look at with like Ironheart, the new version of like the Iron Man type of story that we see. We get new iterations of the characters that more so reflect the people reading it, the audience, the world, stuff that makes more sense culturally to whatever they're representing in these pages. But that's something I think that we're definitely going to see an uptick of because, yeah, the whole Iron Fist thing, it just does not make sense. Like, I didn't want to see, like, a white guy, like, a rich white guy kicking ass like that. I just feel like the story could have been so much more rich and deeper if we saw something else. And even if someone's, like, white in the comics, we don't have to necessarily see that. And we've seen amazing examples of things like that. So something that's written 80 years ago, we don't necessarily need to see it exactly the way it was. What we need is the core characteristics of the characters. I know you guys talked about it on First Cut Live, but it's like for the black Superman that everyone's seeing. It's like Superman was written so long ago. We could see different iterations of these characters on our screens, whether it's in television, in film, in the comics, and it gets everything to be more refreshing and more exciting. I don't want to see another Henry Cavill type guy play our character and just be stoic and have like amazing cheekbones and whatever, you know? Like, I want to see some character, I want to see some of our world reflected in our heroes.
Yeah, what do you feel about that, Alex, as far as where pop culture has told us that these powerful characters that we've known for so long, like a Batman, like, you know, an Iron Fist, or like a whatever, you know, powerful dude in stories are, and how now we're kind of realizing, like, wait a minute, this is so outdated, we should probably make this make sense, right?
Yeah, I mean, we live in a global economy now. More people are aware of things, aware of how culture is portrayed, how, and like Twitter, you know, Twitter can, for better or worse, you know, create waves in the entertainment industry. So like, just knowing that, I think people people can be ready for new types of stories as well, just because, you know, we're calling for more diversity in general. And so like, yeah, please not another, okay. Sorry, I'm excited for Robert Pattinson's Batman because I love him as an actor, but why not see a different type of, you know, like why not a black Batman? We have a Chinese Superman in the comics. So why don't we see that as well? Like,
characters too.
Isn't like Damon Wayans, like, isn't he like a person of color? Batman, if I'm not mistaken, Robin or something like that.
Yeah, because he's Talia al Ghul's daughter. So if you would take Talia al Ghul, the whole al Ghul thing is another thing that I could make a whole dissertation about. Because Ra's al Ghul is my favorite, but obviously that's another stereotype of like, I beat the Asian master in martial arts, and it's like, all right, Batman, all right.
Well, I mean, even
go ahead.
I was gonna say, even looking at, again, I'm talking about recent examples. Look at 2016 with Doctor Strange. I mean, Kevin Feige just came out and made some comments about that.
Yeah.
How he felt like they were doing the right thing. How he felt like they're making the right decision and being like edgy and cool and off the cuff by avoiding the Asian stereotypes, but at the same time whitewashing the part. So it's always like a difficult line, a tricky balance to overcome. Now, the thing that he was talking about, like the Dragon Lady stereotype, is a very real thing, and that comes from like very deep like film race study and whatnot, that evaluates like, you know, like how Asian women have been represented on film, and it's always in deceitful, submissive, mystical ways, as if almost like some uncharted, like you know, desirable femme fatale, but even like harsher, like harsher and more negative and more deceitful than a traditional Hollywood type. And if you watch those old noir movies, you totally see it all throughout it. Even when they go into the, you know, in old noir movies, they typically go into like the salons or any kind of like stereotypical place, and it's always like smoky and weird and all this crazy production design. It's just, like I said, it's entrenched in Hollywood just to have the most negative stereotypes about everybody. And I'm glad at least now that Kevin Feige and the team behind Doctor Strange at least realized that they made the wrong decision. I hope future teams don't continue to make those decisions as well.
Yeah, and kind of going off the Batman thing real quick, just because I know you mentioned Robert Pattinson and we mentioned Batman. I've mentioned Batman quite a bit, but I really do feel like that's kind of that mentality of like, again, martial arts is his superpower, essentially. Hit that and his genius. But I pitched this to a lot of people, and by pitched, I mean I just told my friends. I said Henry Golding for Batman. I thought that would have been kind of a cool choice. He still fits the, you know, badass, cool guy. Go for
right
it.
Right after Crazy Rich Asians, I was like, Henry Golding for Bond. Give it to me.
Come yeah, on. Yeah, like, something like that.
Perfect.
But I feel like an Asian Batman actually would have been a pretty inspired choice that I feel like a lot of people would have been behind. But I did hear through the grapevines that possibly they're doing like a Court of Owls thing inside the Batman universe, which kind of goes into like, you know, weird systemic white supremacy type shit that maybe the Waynes were into. So maybe that's why they specifically wanted it to be a super white dude, because that kind of fits with the Court of Owls type of mentality. For anyone who's...
I just got super excited right now.
I'm referencing a comic book run about how there's this secret organization that controls everything in Gotham, and it's all about like the one percenters inside the Batman universe. But anyways, I'm saying like you said, Sabrina, going all the way back to your point, Sabrina, we are at a time now where I think people would have been like, yo, Asian Batman, let's do it. That makes sense.
Well, because there's no reason. A lot of these times, like, you just need the core aspects of a character. There's no reason not to just hire maybe the best person for the role. Like, someone like a Henry Golding, especially coming off of Crazy Rich Asians, just like Alex said. Something like Bond, hell yeah. There's no reason to have a Bond that looks a specific way. They just have to have all the key elements, and that's what the audience is looking for. And I feel like now with things like Parasite getting critical and, you know, like audience, like amazing reception and all these other films, I feel like a lot of studios back in the day, or just in general, were always afraid to like bank on a specific audience. It's like, oh, if we have these leads and they're Asian or they're Black or whatever, we're making our audience a little bit smaller. We're not going to make as much money. And that's not the case at all. And that's been shown so many times now. We've seen it with Black Panther, how long it took to get something like Black Panther, same thing with Shang-Chi. And Crazy Rich Asians, just again, a simple, like really awesome cinematic experience of a rom-com that I still cannot get over. It doesn't matter how many times I watch it, but the amount of time that it takes for us to get to this point, it's just like, take risks, hire the right person for the job. Like, all these actors audition for the roles. It doesn't need to go to the same few actors that we constantly see over and over again. There are so many amazing, talented working actors today. If we have a show like something like The Good Place or any of these Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist shows that are on cable right now, like, there's no reason to see the cities that they're in be represented unless it's authentically.
Yeah, and obviously another recent example of that is Mortal Kombat. That's a recent example of a success, as much as we can reach a success, because I feel like it's always iffy when it comes to numbers and all that and box office. But I feel like it is a success overall, Mortal Kombat was. And the way that people reacted to it, at least from what I saw, was a very natural, like, yeah, this makes total sense. Like, it's his name is Liu Kang, for crying out loud. This is Raiden, for crying out loud. This isn't like, you know, a character that's supposed to be a stuffy white dude, unless you're like Johnny Cage or something like that. But I feel like people saw the movie and they took it for face value, which is like, this is what makes sense inside the story. And I think that works to a success. I can't tell you how many YouTube reaction videos I saw for the Mortal Kombat, and people were like so involved with it for the martial arts, for the cinematic nature of it, not because they were like, yeah, oh, why do they got to make Raiden an Asian dude? Like, no one said that. Like, everyone was like, yeah, this makes sense. So I think that's working for major box office. But after the break, I want to talk about, like, award films, some quieter films and smaller films that have been kind of coming up over the years. So make sure you guys stick with us after the break, because we're going to be talking more about that.
This ain't funny, so don't you dare laugh. With the 4/5 divide you in half, you getting at me equals a club half.
Have you watched Zack Snyder's Army of the Dead yet? Well, be sure to check out our spoiler-filled review available exclusively on our YouTube channel, First Cut. Enjoy!
I'm a Walking Dead, you know, fan for many years. I've watched a lot of The Walking Dead many, many times through. So I'm very familiar with that kind of mentality. But also Dawn of the Dead. We talked about how Zack Snyder kind of got his big startup with Dawn of the Dead. And in that movie, RB3, there is actually a zombie fetus, a zombie baby. I don't know if you remember that. That's why I was like, this is Zack Snyder, he's doing it again. I didn't necessarily think that was a negative, but I just thought that I was like, oh, I have seen that before. In Dawn of the Dead. Yes.
I found so many like Easter eggs to all different types of horror films. There was literally a moment that was taken out from like an American Werewolf. It's really interesting, kind of like all the different nods that he had to horror filmmaking, zombie filmmaking. And I love that you mentioned that with the mythology and the types of zombies that we're seeing, because we did have the different species. And of course, the alpha is the one that we're introduced to in the beginning. And immediately I was like, yo, he is going to do some damage. And it's like,
come along, children. Now we're going to have a little music.
Alrighty guys, we're coming back from break. We are still here talking about Asian filmmakers. I kind of want to talk about kind of award films now and where we've seen this growth in Asian filmmakers creating films that have been getting a lot of buzz and award attention. Some of them centered around actual like Asian stories or Asian American stories, and some of them not. Obviously, RB3, you mentioned Chloe Zhao with Nomadland, which just won Best Picture, and she won Best Director as well. Obviously, that is not a specific story about the Asian American lifestyle or culture, versus films like Lulu Wang's The Farewell or Lee Isaac Chung's The Minari. But I'm curious to see, what are your takes on those two, specifically Farewell and Minari, Alex, and how they kind of tell a different story as far as growing up in this kind of mix of like Asian and American lifestyle?
Yeah, those are two of my favorite movies of their respective years, just because they really exposed, or really, you know, showed the culture of, you know, growing up and like having to deal with what you like, how your parents' culture, how your, you know, where your homeland, as it were, like how will you honor that, how will it affect the way you live. So I just love those. I love how they deal with that and the legacy of the place that you lived in, where you are now, and how that affects you and everything. So yeah, Lulu Wang did a fantastic job with that. Even she also had a little short for the Lunar New Year this year, which was really, really pleasant, really sweet. You should check it out. I think it's on YouTube or Vimeo. But anyways, it's just they're just very delicate, very truthful, very honest stories about the Asian American experience. And I love those movies. And I hope everyone watching here has seen it already. If not, do some homework.
Yeah, how do you feel like those films, specifically Sabrina, kind of, I know this is kind of a loaded question, and I'm sorry, but how do you feel like those films kind of differ from like actual like international films, like maybe a Parasite, for example? Even though Parasite actually broke barriers and became a Best Picture winner, even though it was technically an international film, how do you feel like The Farewell / Minari compares to like a Parasite?
I mean, when we're talking about Minari, that's the story of something that's dealing with the American dream and an immigrant family. So it's so different because it's kind of what you have to do to acclimate to America, the choices that you have to make, moving around certain areas, taking different jobs. It's stuff, as me being a first generation American, I've heard my grandmother and my mom and my parents all talk about kind of like their experiences with that. And with something like The Farewell, we get another interesting take on that, where we have a American girl, like especially to her family, she's definitely Americanized in the way that she's lived with Awkwafina in The Farewell, and having to kind of go back to where she came from, go back into her culture, see her family again, and all those differences, because it really doesn't sit well with her, the fact that they're hiding the fact that her grandmother is dying. It doesn't sit well, and she's very emotional, but that's the way that they want to do it, and that's the way her family is doing it. So that's something that she has to acclimate back to. And it kind of shows, like, when you go back to your roots or when you're leaving your roots, all these different ideas. But something like a Parasite, that's completely immersing us into a completely different culture. That's immersing us into a world that, like, we personally, most of the audience has not experienced as Americans, their society and how polarizing it is in their version of, like, poverty, like rich versus poor, because we have it so different in so many different countries. But to see it face to face like that in Parasite, it gives us a new perspective. So all of these films, even though they deal with possibly similar themes, especially with, like, Minari and The Farewell, they add so many different ideas and perspectives. And another one was the half of it that I mentioned earlier. That's another really great one that also deals with being like an immigrant in America, and especially being in a town where nobody looks like you. Everybody looks the same. You're kind of the odd person out, and you have to figure out how to create your own way in this world that doesn't really know where you belong sometimes. And so it's so unique and it's so interesting. And that's why I feel like a lot of people really understand it. Even if you haven't experienced something like that firsthand, you get a different perspective. And that's what we look for in art in general, whether it's reading or writing. You're learning something new and you're experiencing an entirely new story through someone else's eyes. And I think that's what makes it special.
RB3, I think we've talked a lot about how Parasite has been a special movie for you, but one of the things I think you told me you liked about it was that it was so surprisingly relatable, and that a lot of the themes you see in that movie is a lot of the themes that you can find in American films, and that the story, although inherently Korean, is also very American, because it is a story of a wealth gap that is so significant and so real in so many countries. How do you feel like that movie, although it is in a different language, can transfer so much into American audiences?
Well, I think, like you said, I think it is very relatable. I think it has a lot of relatable features and aspects that make it. I think that, like you said, from the capitalist angle of it, from the wealth gap angle of it, I also think from the standpoint of, you know, just a struggle in general, you know what I mean? I felt like Parasite the story begins as, like, you know, a struggling family trying to find their way into, you know, this household and this mansion. And it almost begins almost like a comedy. So it almost kind of sets you up in a very, like, Americanized, like, kind of comedic way of, like, hey, here are some poor people trying to get ahead of some rich people by doing some deceitful things. And that's usually a very common comedy premise, but Bong Joon-ho took that and totally twisted it, totally subverted it, and totally twisted it on his head. And I think that's what made it ultimately so special too. I think as much as the themes make it relatable, I also think the quality and the craftsmanship of the film also made it spread so wide too. And I think that's also why people have latched on to Chloe Zhao with No Man's Land. I think that's why people are latching on to Minari, and I think that's why people are latching on to a lot of these films. But I think with Parasite in particular, and same with The Farewell. Farewell had a lot of the dialogue in a different language, but it was so, so relatable, because everybody has a grandmother who's been going through, like, some near-death experiences, or, you know, or fighting something, or struggling to communicate something to that figure in your household. So these are all things that, at the end of the day, we're all human, we're all dealing with these things, you know, on some level or another, even though it's from different cultures. And that's what I love about international cinema, that's what I love about movies like Parasite, and that's what I love about seeing filmmaking outside of just the American perspective.
Alex, how do you feel about that comparison between Minari and The Farewell, and then compare it to A Parasite? How do you feel like those movies differ or relate to each other?
I think, well, Sabrina and RB3 kind of nailed those kind of comparisons. But I think, yeah, the for Farewell and Minari, like, it is about the immigrant experience, and like I did relate a lot to that, and like I see a lot of my family in those families, and that's where that one hit me. Parasite, I think it was also just Parasite was like packaged as a super tense thriller, and that's how it kind of also crossed over into the U.S. audiences, and that's why they loved it. But I just love that all three of these movies got major American buzz, and they all crossed over it. Well, I shouldn't say the Farewell and Minari crossed over because they were American movies. They're movies about, you know, what it means to be American as well. So I'm just glad that those got some attention.
Yeah, I think that was kind of my follow up too. Is like, you would define them as American films, right? I mean, I'm just curious. Yeah, and I feel like that's kind of the big thing too. Is like the difference between, even though they're spoken a lot of the time in a different language, it's still an American story inside those two films specifically. Kind of finishing up on this, when it comes to awards films, where do you see Asian American filmmakers going when it comes to smaller stories being told and getting awards attention, Alex?
I mean, yeah, with Minari getting a screenplay nomination, like, there is more attention on Asian stories being told. We have a movie from Koganada coming this year called After Yang, which he directed and wrote and everything. I'm not sure. It doesn't sound like a necessarily Asian premise, like nothing with an Asian perspective or anything. It seems like very sci-fi, very familial, just kind of in whatever way he wants to tell it, not with a cultural perspective. But I mean, I hope that gets some attention, because I really loved his first movie, Columbus, which was sort of more of a cultural movie. And so I hope to see him, Chloe Zhao. Maybe she'll put some interesting takes into Eternals. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean,
that's a good one.
We're on the up and up, and people are noticing the Asian filmmakers.
Go ahead, Sabrina. Yeah.
Well, and even then, like, the Farewell sweeped the Independent Film Spirit Awards. So the Oscars, of course, are not the only awards. They're the biggest, but they're not the only one.
Yeah.
So
that's why I said awards and not Oscars. Yeah.
We see the Independent Film Spirit Awards really highlighting and championing different types of storytelling always, and different types of storytellers. So it got Best Feature. It got, like, Best Supporting Actress. There were so many awards that it won that day, and deservingly so, 100%. And, like, also being looked at, again, as an American film and not an international feature, just because something has a foreign language in it doesn't make it a foreign language film. Like, that's just something that is crazy to me, because you don't see, like, Inglourious Basterds and think it's, like, it's a foreign language film. No, like, that's by Tarantino. So it's crazy, that kind of, like, double standard that we do see. But also another filmmaker, Destin Daniel Cretton, sorry, I always mess up his name with the first two, but with Short Term 12, and then obviously him working on Shang-Chi, I also want to see him go back to some of those smaller filmmaking as well, because Short Term 12 is one of my favorite movies of all time.
Yeah, that's definitely a very powerful and impactful film. RB3, any final thoughts on Asian filmmakers and what the future holds for them in the industry?
Sorry, was muted. Yeah, I mean, I definitely am looking forward to seeing what's coming next, right? I mean, like y'all said, there's a lot of great blockbuster movies, Snake Eyes, that's coming out, and Shang-Chi, which, by the way, I'm over the moon excited for. I think this is actually the first, I didn't realize this, but this is the first new character that they're bringing into the Marvel movies since Black Panther, like, since, like, 2018, so... it's gonna be crazy seeing this fly. I think there is gonna be a new wave from various areas, like from karate movies, action movies, and I know people, there's still, like, a contingent of people that are still, like, you know, wanting, like, the Chuck Norris's and the Karate Kids and the Cobra Kai's, like, you know, still want that, for lack of a better term, the whitewashed karate. But I think there is, like, more there is more of a desire and a hunger for getting the proper big scale cinematic martial arts representation. I think, you know, beyond that, we're going to see representation in anime adaptations too. I think in TV, we haven't even talked about TV, you know, but shows like Fresh Off the Boat, shows that have, you know, there's a lot of shows that have been doing remarkable work and highlighting the humanity of different cultures. And I think that's why that's the impactful part, is how we're going to shed light on different stories, different aspects, and different lanes for just make it equal, make it an equal opportunity for everybody. So I'm excited to see the future, but I do think there is a long road down the line. I applaud Chloe Zhao, and I applaud directors like Ang Lee and other, you know, people who have reached the top, but I, you know, that's definitely not the ultimate goal. And I'm excited to see more of what people like Dustin, I'm sorry, what was
Dustin Daniel Cretton.
Dustin Daniel Cretton. And all these other filmmakers continue to do in their own right. So,
yeah, I kind of wanted to go off that a little bit, because going off your point about anime adaptations, I think there's this tendency for filmmakers to say, hey, we need an American version of this anime adaptation. And my counter to that is like, yes, an American version can feature Asian American actors. That could still be an American version of that film. Just because it's in an English language and not in Japanese doesn't mean you can't cast Asian American actors. I feel like that's a significant thing that I think a lot of people were pointing out when they were like, oh yeah, but it's an American version, so we need a white dude. And it's like, no, you don't need that. Alex, any final thoughts on what the future of Asian filmmakers holds?
Yeah, well, I first of all, we got in 3 weeks, we got In the Heights coming out, directed by an Asian filmmaker. One of my favorite musicals in general. I'm super excited for that. And I just wanted to shout out a few. I found my list of all the Asian American directors that I found. So I want to shout out Karen Kusama, Jennifer's Body, yes. Invitation, Destroyer, Anish Chaganti, who did Searching and Run, last year's Run, Justin Lin, Better Luck Tomorrow, and most of the Fast and the Furious franchise now. Cary Fukunaga, who actually did direct the new Bond. Who else do I got here? Joseph Kahn. If you haven't watched Bodied, it was my number 3 movie of 2018. It's a rap battle movie, and it is incredible. Alice Wu, Destin Daniel Cretton, Alan Yang, who did Tiger Tail and Master of None, and M. Night Shyamalan. And we always forget that he is Asian-American. So those are just a few of the people that I wanted to shout out.
Can I mention one of the most successful homies that I think is, I don't know if it counts as his movie, Spiral, but shout out to James Wan.
Yeah.
James Wan, who has made so much money off these crazy horror movies just because it has his brand on it. And he's like, yo, pay me. I'm going to make money off that because I still technically made that. Yeah, shout out to James Wan as well. Alex, thank you so much, man. This was a lot of fun. Where can everyone find you, man?
You can find me on Twitter at Alex Marzona, Instagram at just Marzona, and you can find my music on Spotify. And I am releasing a In the Heights cover video on June 1st, so make sure you check that out. Awesome.
Ooh, let's go.
Sabrina, where can everyone find you?
You guys can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at SabrinaXMonica, also on Twitter at SabrinaOnFilm.
RB3.
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at director RB3. And we are doing the premiere of Timestamp. That is coming up Friday, June 4th, 7 p.m. If you want to RSVP, you still can. If you want to watch this film, the one exclusive engagement that we're having for this movie, become a First Cut Patreon today. And that's how you become invited. That's how you are going to be able to watch Timestamp with everybody. So be sure to check that out. Friday, June 4th, become a First Cut Patreon.
Go ahead and do that, guys. And obviously, you can follow me at Squad Leader Race and subscribe here to First Cut. That's the most important thing. To find more of us, follow us on social media at First Cut TMO. We will be tweeting out our thoughts, our episodes. If you need a new episode drop, we will be there as well. So make sure you follow that. Either way, guys, for the First Cut crew, Peace out.